Hello, this is Genoa.
And this is Yusuf.
And this is
In-Flight Entertainment. Yes. And we are about to give you a Valentine's Day review unlike anything you have ever seen or heard before.
Yeah, so because I like the darker side of romance, this appeals to me. We are doing the 1994 movie The Crow, based on the comic book of the same name, and starring the amazing Brandon Lee that we lost during the filming of this movie, son of Bruce Lee. So before we dive into the movie, what was happening in May of 1994?
Okay, well, the stuff we were, we were checking out when we went you know, in movie theaters. See, from 5 to 1, as far as television, it was Monday Night Football. We had to get a football fix. Grace Under Fire was number 4. Home Improvement, number 3. Clooney and the Crew, ER, number 2. And Seinfeld was holding down number 1. It's the early 90s. It was the years of Seinfeld.
I was a freshman in college and I did not have a TV, so I was not watching TV. But what was the number one song? So, because I was probably listening to that.
I don't know if you're listening to this one, but maybe. I mean, it was okay. It was Ace of Base, The Sign.
the secret Nazi band that's trying to indoctrinate people by telling everyone that The Sign was good. Yeah, no, I did not listen to them.
So is The Sign like the swastika? Is that like, that's what they're saying through the song?
I'm not sure if that, like, I know that their song, All She Wants Is Another One, like the baby song, is bashing Black women for wanting a baby and getting welfare. So they are notorious for being a white supremacist group.
So it's safe to say the sign in air quotes in the song is the swastika. She said, I saw the sign and it opened up my eyes. I saw the sign. Maybe it's like they saw the swastika sign and it opened up.
It's very possible. Yes.
Yeah. Well, let's just go with that. You know, like they're just keeping that theme going.
Their songs make my skin crawl. And I'm happy to say I never purchased any of their records.
No.
And I feel like the places I would have gone dancing, which were new wave venues, were not playing that type of music.
Yeah, no.
Like the raves and the new waves were not playing that.
No, by no way, shape, or form. I think if you were to play that song in a venue like that, I think the DJ would be like drugged out in the street and shot. Right.
Yeah. So The Crow, the soundtrack for The Crow, which includes bands like The Cure. The Cure wrote the theme song for the movie called The Song Is Burn. It's not on any other record, I believe. Oh wait, no, it was released on one like the best of in 2016. But they didn't perform it live until like in the 2000s. But it includes bands like The Cure, Stone Temple, Rage Against the Machine, Rollins, Band, Pantera, Helmet, Violent Femmes, Nine Inch Nails. Those were the type of bands that were playing at the clubs I was going to in 1994. Although when I went home, I was going to more poppy type nightclubs,
because
that's all that was available on South Padre.
Yeah, that's all good. Yeah, no, I mean, yeah, this soundtrack, I mean, oh man, okay, it's like, what, there is rare that a movie will have a soundtrack that involves just songs from bands like will make a perfect marriage to what you're seeing visually. And this is one of the movies. It is a it's such a perfect marriage of what you hear with the songs that they drop during, you know, the movie throughout, and what you're seeing as far as the visuals, like the dark, gothic, muddy, rainy aesthetics. I mean, it is so perfect. It is the most perfect thing you would ever see.
So the director got Alex Proyas,
yes,
started doing music videos. So he got his career directing in music videos. So it makes sense that the soundtrack that he would pick for this movie would be the perfect marriage of visual and sound.
So good. Yes. And shout out to Alex. He's like Australian, right? I think he's like Aussie or Kiwi, one of the two. I think he's an Aussie. Okay, like no one really talks about this director. And this is like his first movie, like his first directorial. It's kind of like to go down the lines of like the like directorial debuts from directors, especially directors who start off like doing music videos, like David Fincher. He started off doing music videos, then he did Alien 3. That was his first, you know, and you know, Alex Proyas videos, The Crow, his directorial debut. I mean, I don't know. I think Alex is not in enough conversation as far as directors. I know he don't have a huge and expansive filmography.
But like his two big movies after The Crow were Dark City and iRobot. So Dark City,
oh, the best. Like
Dark City doesn't get enough attention. Dark City was what, like, I feel like Dark City came out right before The Matrix.
Yeah.
Things that were happening in The Matrix were happening in Dark City, but because it was such a weird and obscure story that people didn't understand, it kind of got pushed to the side.
Yeah.
And Matrix got big. But everything you were seeing in the Dark City was what you saw in The Matrix.
Oh my God, Dark City. Okay. We gotta review Dark City one of these days, but for the record, there's very few movies I would say is a perfect movie. Like a perfect movie meaning the story, cinematography, acting, editing, like everything is just perfect. To me, Dark City is a perfect film. The story is so twisty and turny. And it, like, you think it's one thing, but it's not. You think it's a film noir, but it's not. You know, you think it's a detective story, but it's not. I mean, it's just so good. It's such a perfect movie. We got that.
It's a movie you have to pay attention on. It's not like play on the computer or have a conversation or go out, like leave the room and come back. You have to sit there and pay attention.
Exactly. Yeah, so good. Oh, such a perfect. Anyway, so yeah, so Alex Proyas definitely need to be in conversations more as far as directors. And like in The Crow, like The Crow visually, to me, when I first watched it and like when I went to the theater, I was like, I gotta go see The Crow because Brandon Lee, because remember he was in Showdown in Little Tokyo with Dolph Lundgren. Rapid Fire, he did. That was the last movie he did before doing The Crow. Yeah. I don't know if you remember Rapid Fire, but
I actually hadn't seen any of his movies prior to this.
Oh, okay. Yeah, he wasn't in a lot.
But the like Bruce Lee biopic came out the year before this, and I went and saw that. Mm-hmm. And so, like, I knew about Bruce Lee, but I didn't know his story. And I saw that, and I was like, oh, my God. And then I saw his son. I was like, holy shit, he's hot. I have to go see this movie. So I simply went to go see the movie because he was hot. Okay. And the music.
Yeah, totally. Yeah. So it was like, it was everything. And, you know, and that guy. And also
a 19-year-old girl. I had different priorities.
Yeah, nothing wrong with that. So he was in this movie called Rapid Fire prior to The Crow. So I liked Rapid Fire. Actually, watch it. Rapid Fire was pretty good. It was kind of more of his like debut, you know, as like Brandon Lee, the action star, because he was in Showdown Little Tokyo like a few years before Rapid Fire. He was kind of like Dolph Lundgren's partner in that movie, and he was kind of like the Robin. He did some stuff like far as actual as, but he wasn't in the forefront. And The Crow, this movie was like, okay, this is Brandon Lee's vehicle that's gonna just shoot him to the stratosphere. And if he was still alive, he, you know, he would be a big star. Or, you know.
Yeah. So before we dive into the movie The Crow, it is based off of a comic book by James O'Barr. And he was inspired by The Cure and, why can't I think of the other band that he was inspired by?
The Cure.
Who sings Level Terrace Apart?
It wasn't Blue Monday.
Blue Monday's New York Joy Division.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah, there we go.
So he was inspired by The Cure and Joy Division as he was writing this. And it was also a means for him to deal with the death of his girlfriend at the hands of a drunk driver. Mm. It is about an avenging person that him and his girlfriend are both murdered, and they like he comes back to take vengeance on those that have done him wrong.
Exactly. Yeah. But the spirit of the crow brings back a soul who can't rest until that soul finish his duty of vengeance before he can cross over type situation.
Right. Yes.
Yeah. Simple premise. Simple premise. That's all we need, you know, for Brandon Lee to do his thing.
Right. So the movie is basically the same premise. We are introduced to Alex and Shelley, or not Alex.
Eric.
Eric and Shelley. They're engaged, about to get married, and the story takes place in Detroit.
Oh, wow. That was supposed to be Detroit.
Huh?
That was supposed to be Detroit? Wow, okay.
So, yes, the reason why it's supposed to be Detroit is because it has the Night of Fire?
Devil's Night?
Devil's Night. That's an actual thing that happens in Detroit.
Okay.
The movie was filmed in North Carolina, but it's supposed to take place in Detroit.
Okay.
And the Devil's Night, all of the bad people think the Purge, but people go around burning shit down. And the bad guys in the movie are trying to clear up tenement buildings in order to get rid of the folks that are complaining so they can keep people down and out.
Exactly. Yeah. So you have like your usual suspect of like kind of thugs, crazies. You know, you have your knife welding psycho, and you have your pyrotechnic psycho. But of course, they all follow the orders of a big guy. And that big guy, or the main villain, is played by Michael Wincott. I love me some Michael Wincott. Michael Wincott is not in enough movies.
Bad guy.
I mean, his voice. Why? Okay, this is what I'll get about. Okay, if you have a voice like that, like, why? If you're not going to act, why don't you, like, lend your voice to some cartoon character or something? Like, I love his voice. His voice is the best. Like, he just, he's so cool. I love him. Every movie.
For folks that don't know who he is, He's one of those actors where you're like, I know you, but I don't know where I know you from.
Yeah.
He was in Robin Hood.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
He plays one of the bad guys in there. He's in Basquiat,
yeah,
which we told me to review that movie.
Uh-huh. Well, I mean, one of my favorite movies he's in, well, the best movie he was in, to my opinion, was Strange Days. Like, I don't know if you've seen.
Yes. Absolutely. That's another movie we need to review.
Fuck yeah. Yes.
He was in Three Musketeers, 1492, Conquest of Paradise. Yeah,
he was in Metro also. It was like that Eddie Murphy flick. But he was a good bad guy in that movie too. He was really good.
Okay. So, sidebar. He was in the TV show The Equalizer, which was like a weird 80s movie. Did you see that Queen Latifah is going to be the new Equalizer? I'm so excited about that.
Yeah, I'm like, why nobody told me about this? Like, I saw a teaser. I seen her, and it was like Equalizer splash in front of her face. I'm like,
that's amazing.
That is amazeballs. Like, okay, we went from Denzel to Queen Latifah. Oh, this is yes. Amazing. Like, oh, Queen Latifah is going to do some damage as the Equalizer. Oh, yes. I am watching this all day. Yeah, you're right. I had the same reaction when I seen it because I had no idea that this was even being filmed. Yeah. It was so under the radar. They're like, the Equalizer. And I was like, oh, okay, it's the third Equalizer with Denzel, I guess. I just heard it. And then I seen it again. It was like, seeing Queen Latifah. I'm like, oh. It's like CBS. I'm like, oh, this is a show. It's like, this is amazing. Yeah, she got I have like this Asian like woman next to her, like shooting people. So I'm like, oh, okay, like let's do this.
I'm on board.
Yes, I am supporting the queen. All hail the queen. Yes. Definitely.
But back to The Crow.
Yes. Oh, okay. Sorry. Another sidebar. Speaking of albums, now, do you remember like the 94 alternative albums that was dropped?
Well, we definitely had the Stone Temple Pilots release their Nine Inch Nails released something that year, but. Mm-hmm. Yeah. What are you specifically thinking of?
I'm just kind of going down. So Weezer released their album, Oasis. I thought Oasis came out with theirs earlier, but Oasis, Soundgarden was March. And Alice in Chains dropped one in 94. Hole dropped one in 94. And let's see, is another one. Iron Lung. What's that?
Meat Puppets, Backwater.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I love. Okay, remember this band, Our Lady Peace?
Yeah.
Yeah. What happened to them?
I have no idea.
I don't know. I just heard their first album, and I like love, especially like their. They're single, like I think One Man Army. Like I just played the hell out there. So, but yeah, anyway, yeah, I was like, oh, maybe they're like the one who wondered and just did one and never came back.
I feel the big alternative record that year was Soundgarden, Black Hole Sun.
Yep,
that was probably the most popular one that everyone knew.
Yeah, and Oasis, right? I mean. Because what we're going to, yeah,
right. Oasis.
Yeah, like you couldn't get away from, what is it, Wonderwall?
Yeah.
Yeah, you couldn't get away from that song. That song was everywhere. but yeah, it was good. Yeah, they were good. What was it, Gallagher Brothers or whatever?
Yeah, so according to Rolling Stone, the top four were Jeff Buckley, Grace, Weezer.
Mm-hmm.
Nine Inch Nails, Downward Spiral. So I called that. And then Green Day, Dookie. Fucking hate Dookie.
I don't know. Green Day was okay. I don't know. They just sounded very like ex-sporty. Yeah, you know, like something you're like playing like a Mountain Dew commercial. So I don't know. It was just, it was like, man, it's yeah, yeah, like a, like, you know, like if you were like on a BMX, on your BMX bike, or if there was like some X Games going on with, you know,
yeah, I think I was more into the 5 through 10. So number 10 was Beastie Boys. Ill Communication, which included Sabotage.
Mm-hmm.
9 was Vitalogy, Pearl Jam. 8 was Hole.
Okay.
And then 7 was Cash, where like the remake of the Nine Inch Nails type songs and everything. And then number 6 was Soundgarden. So
yeah, that was a lineup. Yeah, hell of a lineup.
Yeah, 1994 was, man, there was some good music that came out that year.
Yeah, I mean, it's like what I love. I think 90, like mid-90s, well, at least with me, like I was on the tracks of, you know, alternative and hip hop, because both of them, like both of those genres just coming out with some awesome albums, you know, like the albums you were calling, you know, like for 94, like those albums. And then on the hip hop end, you had like De La Soul, you had Tribe Called Quest, you had Roots coming out. Yeah, it's like, it was such an awesome, like, bang bang with these two like musical genres, all these amazing artists and albums that was just coming out that year. Yeah,
I'm gonna make you feel old right now. Mm-hmm. That was 30 years ago. So that's like the same as when we're like in the 1980s, when we're listening to Wham and Duran Duran. And Run DMC, it would be like us, our parents going, man, the songs from the 50s, like Buddy Holly, were fantastic. Some of the best music.
Oh, goodness.
Make you feel old.
Yeah, well, hey, well, whatever. Hey, we put our flag on our music. Like, hey, you know, yeah, youngsters, you can listen to our stuff all day and you guys are going to like it.
But yeah, I feel like a lot of the things that were happening in the mid 90s, still, you can put them on, like, if I was to play it for a teenager now and they didn't know that it was old, quote unquote, old music, then it still feels fresh today. So
exactly. Yeah, totally. But like I said, we have the good stuff, so I don't care. It could be 50 years old. All right, sorry. We just sidebarred from Crow. So getting back, because the Crow has so much good music, we have to like dovetail it to, you know, what was going on.
It's part of the story.
Yes.
It's part of the story. Because he was a musician. Like, his character was in a band. They're about, like, he plays the guitar. Like, a lot of the scenes where he's sort of contemplating and thinking about his next scenes, or when he's playing the guitar. So you kind of have to talk about the music.
Yeah, totally. Yeah. He was in his rock band. Was it? I think it was called Hey Man's Joke, was his band. I forget. Yeah. And even when he comes back, he grabs his guitar, you know, he's still a musician even when he's dead. Yeah, it's just cool. And going back to the aesthetics of the movie, this movie really resonated with me. Like, this is before Blade. And to have a movie like with that dark, it was like, okay, like, yeah, Tim Burton's Batman was, yeah, it was dark, but it was campy dark, you know. It was, you know,
it was safe dark.
Yeah. But this, I mean, just the aesthetics, and they use a lot of miniature. Well, they use miniatures for kind of like skylines for this movie, so you don't quite know where you are. Like, you know, it don't look real. It looks like almost a fairy tale land, almost, or very dark, you know, rainy, you know, desolate, like fairy tale land. And I love the approach they deal with that. So that way, like, okay, we're in a city, but we really don't know exactly what, because they didn't show any actual skylines or actual cities. It was like these kind of, you know, camera, like these camera aerial footage of these kind of miniature buildings that the camera's kind of sweeping through and going down and going over.
They did that because they didn't have the budget to go to a big city. But it worked perfectly in the movie.
Yeah, because, I mean, honestly, they could, well, of course they couldn't, but it's like if they would have splashed the title Gotham City during that skyline shot, I would be like, oh, damn, this takes place in Gotham City. Like, this is cool. Because it looks, that's the kind of like a Gotham City out in my head, it would look like super violent, dark, almost lawless. I mean, yeah, you had cops there, but I mean, they're just kind of there to sweep up the victims afterwards. So, you know, plus, you know, Ernie Hudson plays a cop that that found Eric and Shelley's, not found, but was at the crime scene when the accident happened. Well, when the murders happened with them, and when Eric Draven comes back, that's his connection. He finds the officer that was with his fiance doing a surgery, so he can kind of like get that connection through the Ernie Hudson character, because when Eric put his hands on you, he can feel kind of like what you felt
and see what you saw. Yeah. So Ernie Hudson, folks may know him from our generation from Ghostbusters. He was a black Ghostbuster, for those that don't recognize his name.
Yeah. Yes. The black Ghostbuster is a cop now.
For all my white people out there, guys, sorry.
Well, that's true. It's Black Ghostbuster. Black history, but Black Ghostbuster. So throughout the story, that was kind of a narrative device, you know, for Ernie Hudson to kind of stay like in the plot and helping Eric and, you know, kind of like piecing what's going on at the same time. What was the girl's name? The little girl.
Sarah.
Right. I know it was like two S's. Like it was like Sarah and Son Shelby. And, yeah. Sarah. Yeah. And so Sarah, you know, so Sarah's, she's the skateboard teenager who befriended Shelley and Eric, and like the bulk of the movie takes place, well, I think 1 year after the murder of Eric and Shelley.
Yeah, it's exactly 1 year after their murders, and Sarah is a like latchkey kid. Her mom's addicted to heroin and sort of using her. But she's a sex worker / waitress, in that she sleeps with the folks that are selling the drugs in order to get the drugs, really. Mm-hmm. And has abandoned her child. So her child, Sarah's out there and just trying to get by in life on her own without any parental supervision. And Eric and Shelley really took her under their wing to be the friends and parents that she didn't have.
Mm-hmm. All right.
And so when they were killed, she was left on her own. And Sarah did end up bonding with the police officer played by Ernie Hudson that found their or was on the scene of their murders. Mm-hmm. And I can't say his name. Albrecht.
Yeah. All right. Yeah, we'll go with that.
Yeah, and he sort of plays so Eric has the crow that's guiding him and showing him all the things that he needs to see in order to accomplish his goal to take vengeance against the people that murdered Shelley and him. But the police officer, Albrecht, is also there to tell him the story of actually what happened after they died.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And so then begins his revenge rampage. And first it starts with the guy with the knives.
Yeah, Tintin. Yeah.
And then it goes on to, is Fun Boy the next person that gets murdered?
Yeah, because he's the one that's messing with Sarah's mom and giving her like the heroin.
Right. Yeah. Yes. And then we have the guy that's into fire gets killed next. I forget his name.
T-Bird.
Oh, T-Bird.
David Patrick Kelly. Okay, so. David Patrick Kelly. Actually, David Patrick Kelly is actually from Detroit, Michigan. Now, David Patrick Kelly, David Patrick Kelly is another actor similar to Michael Wincott. It's like when you see him, it's like, yes, man, well, you need to be in much more movies because he is so good. I mean, he goes back as far as, I'm sure he goes back even more. Well, people my generation will remember him from The Warriors. And his famous line, "Warriors, come out and play." He's so awesome. He was in Twin Peaks, and so many other things. Yeah, I love that dude. He just know how to get in movies that's like cult classics. God bless him.
And he was also. Tragically, I believe he's the person that was holding the gun that was shot that ended up killing Brandon Lee.
Really? And
And he actually, so he stepped away from acting. Let me go double check that.
That's some shit to carry. Like, man, like knowing that like your gun was the one that had the fragment that took out Brandon Lee. We have to mention Tony Todd, Candyman himself, is in this movie also, which is awesome.
Which character is he?
You know, he was the black guy that was kind of investigating for Michael Wincott. You know, he had the glasses.
Got it. Okay.
Yeah. You know, he went to the grave site and he was like looking at the, you know, Eric Draven's tomb and that's Candyman, y'all.
School Candyman.
Yeah, that's the school Candyman. Yeah, Tony Todd. Yeah. So yeah, and you know, hats off to the director and the producers and everyone with this movie. Even though you know they lost Brandon Lee tragically throughout this production, they did an amazing job piecing together the rest of the movie to get it out to us. They did a lot of digital, you know, trickery, things like that. They did a lot of like doubles, like a double of Brandon Lee and certain like wide shots and digitally put Brandon Lee's face on a person in the dark, stuff like that, just to pull off, you know, certain shots.
I was wrong. Fun Boy shot him. That was Michael Massey.
Oh.
So it wasn't David Patrick Kelly. Sorry. My mistake. Okay. Sorry, guys.
yeah, it's okay. Oh, man, but that still sucks. That still sucks.
Yeah, he stopped acting for a bit afterwards. But yes. Yeah, so they use CGI in some places, but then they also, the great thing about this film was that because there were so many dark scenes and the scenes that they didn't have Brandon Lee available because he was dead to shoot them, they either didn't show his face and just showed the person's body, or like they would show his face falling, like in a cracked mirror or his body falling, and that was all CGI. So, like, going back and watching the movie, you can't actually tell it's CGI. It's very good.
Yeah, yeah, they did an awesome job, especially, you know, because there were, the cuts were pretty quick, so, it was enough to give off, process it in your mind, oh, that's Brandon Lee, but it's digital. It was like, oh, okay, oh, that was digital, okay, so so that was a good, kind of metric, when you watch these shots. And also, when the sequence when he comes out of his grave, and he's kind of stumbling back to the scene of the crime, aka his home, and it's a lot of actually he wasn't in that scene, and like Jim would say, it was a lot of digital close-ups of him, against like cracked mirror. And And like when lightning flash, you see the flash of Brandon's face and things like that. But they did such a great job. And that whole sequence was so amazingly edited. What I love about that sequence, it didn't linger on, okay, he gonna be the Crow. It's like, we just need to get to it. And it did such an amazing job through the editing. Like, the flashes, his memories that made him enraged. He throws the paint on his face. He walks out, doing on the ledge where he got jumped off at. And then it's like that pan out, that camera pan out of his face digitally on a body double. And a crow is on his shoulder. It's like, boom. Like, all right, let's get to some killing. Let's go. It was, and then like, which song was playing during that sequence? I know like a song kicked in. I forgot which one though.
I believe it was The Cure, Burn.
Yes. Again, a perfect marriage of what you're hearing and what you're seeing. I mean, it was amazing.
Yes, it was. And so it was funny because I watched this a couple months ago, and while I was watching it, I was texting with Yusuf. I was like, I feel like Heath Ledger was totally inspired by this character when he was doing the Joker for The Dark Knight, because as you're watching The Crow, there's so many scenes where Brandon Lee just feels manic and angry and out for revenge, because that's his character. And then you go watch Brandon Lee as the Joker and you're like, holy shit. Like, the makeup is similar. It's it's that.
I totally agree. Maybe we would never know, but you can see there are certain elements or certain nuances, if you will, that you will put those performances next to each other, you can see some parallels. Just saying. And to your point, and I'm glad you brought up with his how he played the Crow, he brought so much depth to this character that could have just been like, like a Wolverine kind of hack and slash, mean, just angry all the time. Like he brought the tortured soul, right? But then again, he brought like a playfulness to knowing he's invincible. Like, he shot and all this, like he was healing up. It was almost like he was toying with his victims at a certain point. He was cracking jokes and, I think that was like the worst thing, right? It's like the angel of death is coming down upon you, but he's kind of laughing about your demise. Like,
I viewed it like when I was 19 watching this, I viewed it as everyone's going to die someday. So why not have a little bit of fun as I take you out before your time?
Yeah, definitely.
He's enjoying his job, guys. That's what it's all about.
Exactly. And also, like, reflecting upon the person, the people who, you know, raped and murdered his fiance, the type of twisted glee, like, is going to be projected right back to him. You know, it's like this joy of me doing this to you, just like you did this to, you know, the person I love, you know, like, I'm going to laugh about it. I'm going to play with you. I'm going to, you know, yeah, that's what I really loved about how he brought it. He wasn't just yelling and killing. He was, you know, he was toying with him. He was playing with him. He was, you know, he was being, you know, like the jolly murderer, because they were jolly when they busted in their apartment and killed them. So I was like, hey, you're about to get this right back. And I'm going to have fun just like you have fun destroying my life. So I definitely love how he brought, you know, that. And then he was sad. Plus, he brought that sadness too. You know, when he's on the rooftop playing like that lonely guitar solo and stuff like that. I mean, just all these different elements he brought to, you know, the character. It was definitely a testament, you know, to what he could have done more.
Yeah, so ultimately he gets his revenge against all the characters, and there's a big giant showdown on the top of a church. And he gets to rest in peace after he takes his revenge. So I have to ask, have you seen the other Crow movies?
I kind of remember sort of seeing, what was it, City of Angels, the second one.
I think there's three new ones.
Oh, okay. Now, I remember seeing the second one that came out. Because when I worked at a movie theater, the second one came out. Was that like 96 or 97? I forgot when the second one came out. That was one with Iggy Pop, if I'm not mistaken. He was in the second one. I thought I was saying he was in the second one. So
The Crow City of Angels came out in 96.
Yep.
The Crow Salvation came out in 2000.
Mm-hmm.
The Crow Wicked Prayer came out in 2005. And it looks like there was some sort of The Crow Stairway to Heaven. One second, I'm going to go check. I can't tell if it's a TV show or a movie.
Because I think didn't The Crow like?
Oh, there was a TV series.
Yeah, right. I don't remember. I didn't watch it.
Well, it's on Bravo. If anyone wants to go explore that,
gotcha. I only watched the second one. I kind of remember the second one, but not really.
The TV show was on for two seasons, and if anyone saw John Wick number 3, the sushi guy that goes and kicks Keanu Reeves' ass,
mm-hmm.
He plays the Crow.
Wow. Okay.
He plays Eric Draven. Yeah.
All right. I will watch that out of sheer curiosity.
Yeah, me too. Yeah. I know what I'm doing tomorrow.
Did it come out a couple of years ago?
No, it's from like 2000.
Oh, 2000. Gotcha.
Oh wait, it's from 1998.
Oh, okay. So a few years after the second one. Gotcha.
Yeah.
All right. Yeah. So did you watch? Okay. Did you watch them?
No, I haven't seen any of the other ones, and no desire to.
Yeah, I mean, like I said, you know, Iggy Pop was amusing in the second one, but that's pretty much it. Yeah, but yeah. So I would say, okay, before we kind of wrap it up, this is generally like one of my favorite like love stories. Yeah, because I always tell people like my love stories are unorthodox. Like it's The Crow, it's Eternal Sunshine, The Spotless Mind. It's The Matrix. I mean, you can look at The Matrix as a love story because, you know, Trinity and Neo, They were ratted. Yes. They were straight up ride or die. Yes.
Yeah.
They were ride or die for each other. That's like love story. So the crow is definitely, yeah. And I get a little allergies in my eyes, the last scene of the crow when Shelley, with her like angelic white, you know, it's like the light shine on her and she touches Eric's head gently and he looks up at her and it's like, they're together again. So it's one of my love stories. One of my favorites.
So I assume based on our rating system, it is sit on the sofa.
Yeah, you sit down, you watch some mayhem, and you watch some revenge, and you watch some love. All in.
So as far as like comic book movies go, where would you rate it in the comic book adaptation?
Are we mentioning like all of them? Like we mentioned DC, Marvel, everybody?
Everyone.
This would be number three.
What are the first two? Blade.
Okay, no, number four. So Blade, Superman, Christopher Reeves.
Okay.
And number three, Iron Man.
Interesting. Mm-hmm. I agree with three of the four. I would not put Iron Man in there. Iron Man might come a little bit later for me.
It's all good. I mean, for the first outing of an Iron Man movie, I mean, I was floored. I mean, Iron Man is like a damn near E-list Marvel character in the kind of movie he came out with as his first outing. I'm like, holy crap. So that's why I put that up there. Definitely Blade and then Black Panther is like right there too. And Sam Raimi Spider-Man is in like number five. That kind of tops to five.
So this is definitely sit on the sofa for me. I mean, I watched it a couple times just in the past couple months, not because we're reviewing it, because it is an amazing film. The music, the directing, the cinematography, it's so
perfect,
dark.
Such a perfect movie. It's a perfect fucking movie. It's a perfect movie.
So the director did want to film it all in black and white and only have parts where Eric was in the scene that he was killing people in red, but the studio like killed that. So instead he did it in dual and like dark tones. And normally that bugs the fuck out of me. For example, I cannot watch Ozark because there's a blue tint to every single scene. But in this movie, it really works.
Yeah. I mean, just for the sheer aesthetic of, you know, the comic and the movie. They did it. Another thing that makes this movie so great is it feels so much like a low-budget independent film. Like, there's so many practical, like, things, like practical effects, miniature. It's like, it didn't feel big at all. It don't feel like a huge, like comic book film. It felt very small and budget wise, like budget constrainty. But I think that's what works with this movie. It kept it small. It kept it intimate. It kept it like, okay, the crow have to kill these specific people. It's like he don't need to save a cat from a tree or anything like that. Like, he have to come after these people. I think that's what I really loved about like this movie. It just felt like an independent film almost.
Yeah. I mean, yes. I just Yes.
Everything about this movie is a yes. Yes. Yeah, and we'll keep you guys posted on our announcement to review the director's next masterpiece after The Crow, which is Dark City. Yeah, we'll keep you posted on that, but we are going to jump on that one at a certain point.
Yeah, which Dark City stars Kiefer Sutherland at his best, in my opinion. But
oh, yeah. Yeah, what like was it? William Hurt, Jennifer Connelly, like everyone.
Rufus Sewell, Jennifer Connelly. Yeah.
Yeah. No, that's just a perfect fucking movie. Anyway, so there you have it, guys. The Crow. If it's been a while since you've seen it, definitely give it another look, especially for Valentine's Day, because maybe you will look at this movie in a different light now. It's not just a revenge comic movie. It's also a sweet and touching love story underneath it all.
Yeah, so it's available to rent on Amazon Prime, or if you have HBO Max, it's available to watch on there.
Nice. Yeah, so revisit it. You will not be disappointed. All right, so till next week, wish everyone safe physical distancing and
wear a mask.
Yes. Just paint your face in shadow small.